wake up everybody, no more sleeping in bed, no more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show.
Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way.
And now, your host, Gary Noel.
To what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. I'd like to welcome you. And for all of the thousands of new people who are tuning in, in fact, so many people tuned in earlier this week that people over the internet listening had a hard time because we exceeded our bandwidth. We've doubled our bandwidth so that more people can tune in. Our program is based upon empowering people, trying to suit as many of the people's needs as possible. For example, health and nutrition. Today, we're going to start with a study that reveals that nutrition and lifestyle intervention can really make a difference and change the outcome of people with type 2 diabetes from the Lewis Balk Institute in the Netherlands, published in the British Medical Journal, Nutrition and Prevention and Health. Something we've been saying for a long time, and it's always nice to see that what we were talking about in 1970 is now acceptable. It's in the mainstream literature. Doctors, mainstream doctors, are not afraid to say, you should maybe get some counseling from a certified nutritionist, because that way the doctor won't be limiting what they help the patient with their own limited educational background, but rather someone who's qualified in the field. For decades, that would never happen. It was assumed that the doctor was all-encompassing, all-wise, the fount of all knowledge. Simply wasn't true. So we want to give you the best, always citing the best peer-reviewed literature, always citing the respected institutions. All the studies I cite can be found on PubMed, the government's official database for respectable information. Then we take on issues. We take on important issues. Why? Because everywhere you look, your freedoms are being undermined, your freedom of choice. Should you have the right over your body, over your child's body, what to do with it? I believe so. But I believe freedom of choice is most responsible when a person is fully educated to the consequences. So the more you educate yourself on an issue, more often than not, the better choice you'll make. Instead of being propagandized by special interest groups and AstroTurf groups, very biased people. So Google is not your friend. Wikipedia is your enemy. And Facebook, well, Facebook is not sure what it is, I'm sure, except a very profitable center, but it also censors. So all the media is censoring what is not in the best interests of corporate America or the mainstream establishment. So you're only getting one side of a story. So we continue to challenge them with more investigative reporting than any other media in America. Just today, we have a brand new story coming at you. And these are not just simple opinion pieces. We don't do those. Instead, these are in-depth discussions based upon good scholarship, all fully cited. Today, Richard Gale will be on in about 10 minutes to talk about the newest article, Science-Based Medicine, a Swamp of Medical Buffoonery. So you can't trust anything that you read on Wikipedia when it comes to complementary and alternative medicine because it has bias from anonymous people. So we've exposed them in 68 articles. That's more articles written on a single group than we can find written on any other group in the United States. And you can use that information. It could save your life. We also take on issues on the environment, 5G. And what we can do to change the outcome for the globe, individually and collectively. So that's our program. So we have an expanded broadcast stream now, so more people can listen. Also, if you want to watch, not all, depending upon the restrictions they place on it. Some people don't want their videos streamed. Fine, we respect that. But for those who don't mind, then we show them to you so you can actually watch them by going to youtube.com/PRNFM. youtube.com/PRNFM. And if you miss the program in real time at 1 to 2 Eastern Time, Monday to Friday, Tuesday night, Progressive Commentary Hour, you can always archive our archives, which have thousands, tens of thousands of programs. Here's the number. Please write it down. 701-719-9976. Again, 701-719-9976. We always begin with the latest on health and healing. Same today. First up, researchers from the Louis Bolk Institute in the Netherlands conducted an observational study to determine whether lifestyle interventions were effective in mitigating the global burden brought about by diabetes. And they published in a very respected journal, the British Medical Journal. Now, given the epidemic increase in the United States of type 2 diabetes and in India, experts are now looking at the potential not of drugs, but of lifestyle interventions to stem this tide. In the study, a team highlighted the need for new practice-based evidence to better understand the solution. The team used a multi-component outpatient group-based approach, meaning they're looking at several different things, and it's all in the lifestyle. And they published the results. How to control your blood sugar by multiple different things, including a good, healthy, plant-based diet, exercise, etc. We've been saying that and doing that for a long time. You've heard people on the air here who lost 110-point reduction in their blood sugar in 1 to 2 weeks, and it stayed normal. So, once again, not the New York Times or CNN. They're not looking for this information. We're creating it. Just so you know, we are the leaders in the United States of doing clinical nutrition studies, lifestyle behavior modification studies, publishing in peer-reviewed literature, presenting before scientific conferences, broadcasting on the air, writing articles, doing documentaries like Plant Codes, Curing the Incurable, Saving the Planet One Bite at a Time, to show that we have that power. Don't give it over to the government. Don't give it to the bureaucrats, technocrats. Don't give it to corporate America, because their interests are not necessarily in alignment with yours. From the Institute of Rural Health, which is in Poland, they did a study published in the Annals of Agriculture and Environmental Medicine, and they found that the young green barley sprouts contain essential nutrients. It also has a wide range of biological activities, including very powerful anti-inflammatory, turning off inflammation throughout your body. It is hypoglycemic, meaning it can help control your blood sugar. It is antidepressant. It is anti-atherosclerotic. It is anti-cancer. Wow. All those great things in green barley. Now, green barley has no gluten because, like wheatgrass sprouts are the sprout. They have not germinated into having the gluten, so they're extremely good for you. And you can go into almost any health food store and get barley greens. So that can help you on all different levels. Also, from Bowling Green State University, certain meditation strategies can help perfectionists. Now this is an unusual study. Mindfulness meditation with a focus on non-judgmental qualities of emotion can help perfectionists recover from stress. This is published in Psychophysiology, the peer-reviewed journal. What do I mean? The study used high-frequency heart rate variability to measure recovery from stress because stress adversely affects your heart. In fact, you can literally stress yourself to death. And they could reduce this and eliminate this simply with mindfulness meditation. They took 120 top university students that scored at the highest in perfectionism, meaning the people needed to be or appear perfect. Now, we have a lot of people within our society who need you to believe that they're perfect. And a lot of these are at the more respected for no other reason than perception, not because they're better than a state university, or for that matter, even what happens when you come out of a trade school. By the way, have you noticed there are very few demonstrations and there's absolutely zero snowflakes at trade schools learning what can really give them a job and where the jobs are in masonry, carpentry, glazing, steelwork, ironwork, and framing? No. No, they're there to learn, not there to, you know, show how entitled they are. And by the way, what is a perfectionist terrified of? For you to see that they're human. They make errors. We all do, if we remain at the human level. But not these people. First, they had the mistake of having parents, and it wasn't their fault, who were the helicopter parents, always hovering over every second of a child's being, never allowing anything within that child's life that the parent hadn't approved of. Maybe you'll remember when you were a kid. Did you walk to school? Did you go to the local park to play? Did you have time with your friends away from your parents? Did you come in at lunch and your mom served you some tomato Campbell soup and or what was it, chicken noodle soup? I think those were the only two soups they knew of. And a grilled cheese sandwich. Am I the only one who remembers that? And then you went back out, and if you had a cut or a bruise or a scrape or something, it was all right. You know, it was part of life, playing in the dirt, playing with kids, all drinking out of the same fire hose, playing kick the can and building little forts and making new friends and having your own little initiations and all these things that kids do. We were allowed to do it. We were the last generation allowed to do it. Today, a parent can actually be brought up on charges of child neglect or abuse if they allow their child to walk to school unaided, unsupervised. So we've had this massive indoctrination from parents who wanted their children to be perfect. So when you grow up in that environment, you're going to end up with kids who try to be perfect. They're terrified, they're insecure, they're angry, can't show it. How do I know? Because one of my friends was Dr. Janice Keller Phelps. I helped Dr. Phelps after she gave me a call in the mid-1970s because she was under attack as the top pediatrician in Oregon because she was emphasizing breast milk instead of formula. Yeah, they were going after her. And when she came to New York to explain and show documents of the harassment, she was talking about how before she'd gone to Oregon, she'd worked down in the Baltimore area in Washington, D.C., and she was a counselor for the court where kids would come in having done some stupid thing. And it was almost always children from the professional class, legislators, doctors, lawyers, judges. And these were the kids who were acting out. And they were acting out because they hated their parents, because the parents gave them no freedom on any level, micromanaged every part of their life. So they really never had a chance to be a child in the sense that other children around the world and here in the United States up to about 1980 could be that child. And I, at the same time, was overseeing drug addiction as one of my responsibilities as a research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology in New York City, which was associated with Trafalgar Hospital. So at that time, you had a choice. You could go to jail or you could go into recovery, and that was mainly just methadone. It was stupid. It didn't work. It was just a bureaucratic idea of how to solve a problem, but create four more problems in the process. Some of the kids were from poorer neighborhoods, but most were from affluent families. And they were not interested in change. They were spoiled. And they felt they had a right to do whatever they wanted and drug whatever they did. And they were angry that they had to be there for so many hours per week. So just imagine now one of those people is a little older, now's in work someplace. Do you think that they left all that conditioning at the door? They're just going to be a decent human being, able to laugh at themselves and each other, not take everything personally, stop wearing those merit badges, I am a victim forever, because it gains you attention and it gains you emotional rescuers that will come by the legions to try to rescue you from yourself. But you know you're not going to be rescued because you've got too much invested in being a victim. Oh, we're a nation of perpetual victimization. But we've all been victimized at some level, to some degree, some worse than others, depending upon the circumstances in which they grew up, the family input, and their own choices, or the choices made for them. So here this study from Bowling Green State University is saying simple mindfulness meditation is able to allow a person to realize you're not perfect, so stop acting like you are. Stop acting like you're the smartest person in the room. One of the reasons I don't go to parties or social events around academics anymore, because I did. I would go up to Columbia University because I lived on the Upper West Side. I was invited a lot. Friends were professors. Imagine the movie with Burton and Taylor, who were married at the time, and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? That kind of highly charged, intense, megalomania, narcissistic environment is what I found. Very few people were interested in just listening to what others had to say. It was all about me, 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 me. And then, of course, they took that right into the classroom. So there wasn't much room for a learner. I don't like calling them students because they're really not students. They're learners. They're there to learn. And part of the learning process is questioning, legitimate questions. Let's not assume that the person teaching has all the answers or even the right answers. And so they're the perfectionists in their world, and hence they have the right to judge others with such stridency. So what this study showed was that mindful meditation is able to create a sense of incorporating non-judgmental awareness and acceptance, and that leads to better recoveries compared with general mindfulness meditation. So, for all of you who have been faced by those who do not listen, only talk, those who judge, but never forgive, those who pride themselves on their mean-spiritedness, violence, vengeance, anger, rage, they could be helped if they want to be. But it means an inner journey to a place that's seldom do they recede into, and that is the inner sanctum of the conscious mind, to do conscious, mindful meditation. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 18 minutes in our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue with our series of showing why we believe everyone should walk away from Wikipedia. We do not believe that it represents a real encyclopedia and is there to inform the public in an unbiased way. We have proven this with 67 articles and 13 letters to their legal counsel and their boards. They're there to serve, in our opinion, their own personal, ideological, political, and economic interest. Richard Gale will explain in the newest article coming out and posted today on PRN.fm. Back with you in a moment. Please stay with us.
Hey, what's up now? Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man. Brother,
far too many of you died. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love. Father,
we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to go to Richard Gale in a moment, but coming up after Richard Gale, we have a Conversation with Remarkable Minds interview with Professor Francis Boyle. The topic, the weaponization of the coronavirus. Now, either 2 days ago, it was 2 days ago, we had on a professor talking about how the coronavirus had been altered, but he was not sure whether it was altered to make a vaccine or to be weaponized. We'll ask Professor Francis Boyle, professor of international law at the University of Illinois Law School, a long career as an anti-war activist and upholder of human rights, what his position is on this. But now we go over to Richard Gale. Nice to have you with us, Richard.
Good afternoon, Gary.
Share with us now the latest article in the ongoing series challenging the legitimacy of Wikipedia, its editors, its skeptics, the science-based medicine, a swamp of medical buffoonery. The form is yours.
Yes. We've been writing about science-based medicine for a little while now, but the more I dive into looking at their articles and the articles I receive from them, there's always new insights that come up. So this is kind of an upgrade of the insights of what they do, and to remember that this is one of the primary warehouses, you could say, for the skeptics and editors on Wikipedia to do their critiques of complementary and alternative medicine, natural health. So I'll just go right into reading this, and let's begin with every religion, large institution, political party, scientific and social discipline, they all have their lunatic fringes. Within the practice of medicine in the 21st century, the aberrant margins are probably the far extremes of alternative medical beliefs, and a small clique of science-based medicine within the conventional medical establishment. While the former is completely unsupported by any credible science, the latter is plagued by rampant short-sightedness, professional bias and hubris, and outright disdain towards all medical therapies that do not fall within the purview of its worldview of uncompromising scientific reductionism. Unfortunately, despite a small following, the leaders of science-based medicine voices have succeeded in having an enormous detrimental influence over the narrative of healthcare and the freedom of medical choice in the social media, including Wikipedia. The Society of Science-Based Medicine is the brainchild of Dr. Stephen Novella at Yale University, with the loyal support of his colleagues David Gorski, an oncologist at Wayne State University, and Harriet Hall. Science-based medicine blogs, including the science-based medicine blog itself, Neurologia, and Respectful Insolence, have functioned as a clearinghouse of opinions for the modern skeptic organizations to source alternative and to source opinionated and prejudiced essays in their efforts to critique and debunk alternative natural medical therapies, including those that have received mainstream acceptance in the field of complementary and alternative medicine. A brief visit of a science-based medicine blog will reveal that approximately 90% of its content is savage, circumlocutory, and scientifically shoddy attacks against non-conventional medicine and those who practice these natural therapies. For the most part, its articles represent personal opinions rather than rigorous scientific inquiry. And the site largely serves skeptics on the Internet and Wikipedia to fuel them with the ammunition for their anti-complementary medicine campaigns. Science-based medicine's David Gorski's articles are unquestionably the most entertaining, albeit flagrantly bombastic. In a recent article sharing his despair over the rise of alternative health's popularity within the conventional medical community, he writes, and I quote, "As much as I hate to admit it, at times I feel like Sisyphus, pushing the boulder up the hill only to have it roll down the other side, only to have to push it back up the hill and roll down again, over and over and over again for all eternity. Certainly, trying to keep track of pseudoscience and medicine and trying to educate why so much of so-called complementary and alternative medicine is quackery And the stuff that isn't quackery is just medicine rebranded as complementary medicine. And why integrative medicine involves integrating quackery with medicine just seemed like a Sisyphean task. This is classic Gorski. Yet perhaps it's an indication that he may suffer from a savior complex. Does he believe he holds a prophetic mission to warn against the very bad bogey women and the bogeymen and the alternative natural health communities who are determined to force upon the public vitamins and supplements, medicinal herbs, healthy diets, and alternative natural medical therapies for personal gain? Rather than allow Gorski to wallow in the self-pity of his eternal fate, to battle effective natural medical treatments with his quarry, might his burden be lessened by bolting the boulder on his back? Conspiratorial paranoia, scientific denialism, and the lack of critical thought abound in skeptical science-based medicine publications. It is witnessed in science-based medicine's unwavering defense of genetically modified foods, fluoride, vaccines. There's Novella's defense of the endocrine disruptor bisphenol A, the herbicide glyphosate, Roundup, synthetic chemical sweeteners, and more recently, the telecommunication industry's talking points about the safety of electromagnetic radiation from cell phones and the coming 5G Internet of Things. Over the years, science-based medicine authors have attacked gluten-free diet, state licensee of acupuncturists and naturopaths, plant-based diets, nutritional therapies, the keto diet for mental disorders, omega-3 and other dietary supplements, antioxidants. In the SBM universe, with few exceptions, only pharmaceutical drugs and surgery should define medical practice. Given Novella's positions noted above, it comes as no surprise that we find him serving as an advisory board member for the American Council on Science and Health, pro-industry front organization with financial ties to Chevron, Exxon, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, McDonald's, Bristol-Myers, Procter & Gamble, almost all of the agricultural giants, including Bayer, Monsanto, and the tobacco industry with Altria, Reynolds American, Philip Morris, and others. Surely this is the real quackery of junk science that poses the greatest threat to public health and costing the lives of millions of the planet's citizens. Least worrisome is science-based medicine's reliance upon cherry-picked science, its scientific arguments against complementary medicine, and its ideological belief, which is that of skepticism. It strictly adheres to a dominant medical institution that we now find cracking at the seams. Once science-based medicine's rhetoric is fully deconstructed and understood, it echoes as an exasperated last-breath effort to keep alive the failure of Herbert Spencer's, Karl Marx's, and the founder of scientism, Auguste Comte's 19th century scientific materialism. And unless science-based medicine receives imperial decree, there is very little chance this French movement will gain much popularity nor have any constructive impact within the medical community. Skeptic proponents of science-based medicine seem determined to prevent medicine from evolving beyond its current reductionist materialist perspective. For that reason, its followers adamantly oppose funding research that may someday explain why and how alternative healing modalities have been successful to countless people worldwide. Consequently, skeptics are the strongest opponents of the growing trend in complementary health therapies, entering medical school curriculums and being offered in hospitals and clinical settings. In recent years, the American Medical Students Association has sponsored an Integrative Medicine Day. Novella and Gorski have damned this effort as quackademic medicine and have published articles exorciating the study of natural health treatments as a threat to science. Writing for the New York Times, health journalist David Freeman called these medical skeptics, quote, prickly anti-alternative medicine warriors. However, what is far more vexing is science-based medicine's religious zealotry, discredit any and all medical practices that it does not agree with. This is best displayed by these authors' consistent use of demeaning language and exhibiting a narcissistic sense of intellectual superiority. More often we find ourselves questioning their state of mind and lack of reasonable integrity. For example, advocates are readily averse to the precautionary principle. Once they grasp onto a belief, such as the non-toxicity of fluoride or glyphosate, this belief rapidly morphs into dogma, despite the evidence to the contrary. But modern medicine's increasing acceptance of complementary therapies, according to Gorski is a trend that we should mourn. In his art, in one of his articles, he opines over a press release by the National Institutes of Health, National Center of Complementary and Integrative Health, that reported, quote, "More than half of office-based physicians recommend at least one complementary health approach to their patients, according to a new analysis of data from a nationally representative survey. In addition, female physicians recommended every complementary health approach at a higher rate than male physicians, except for chiropractic and osteopathic manipulation." The remainder of Gorski's article is a criticism of the report's underlying message and then reshaping the facts into science-based medicine's own image. It is intellectual alchemy that only unveils a deep-seated callousness and animosity towards natural health and those who practice it. Gorski states that it bothers him that, quote, "so many physicians recommend vitamins and supplements." And it bothers him even more that, quote, "so many physicians recommend acupuncture, 22.4%. homeopathy, 12.6%, and naturopathy, 10.4%. David, we're delighted you are Bob. Welcome to the evolutionary changes happening within modern medicine that finally woke to the volumes of research skeptics categorically ignore and deny. Seemingly, Gorski and Novello want to carry medicine back to the days of the Flexner Report at the beginning of the last century, when modern medicine first turned tyrannical to appease industrial giants such as Carnegie and Rockefeller. Gorski writes, quote, "If you don't understand that naturopathy is a hodgepodge of pseudoscience and quackery mixed with some sensible interventions based on diet and lifestyle, although truth be told, even the science-based interventions used by naturopaths are usually tainted with pseudoscience, you should not be a physician." Regarding acupuncture, he writes, quote, "Many years ago, I once thought there might be something to acupuncture. The more I read, the more I studied it, though, the more I realized it's just a theatrical placebo and that its only effects are non-specific placebo effects." And the more I read science-based medicine articles and these lengthy diatribes attacking the advances in alternative health, the more I realize that Gorski Novella et al. might be living in an alternative universe. And then finally, David concludes, quote, "In reality, this study," referring to the NIH study, "is very much like all the studies examining complementary medicine usage. Its function is marketing, not to inform. Expect it to be used to argue how popular complementary medicine is, how many doctors accept it, and thus to argue to policymakers and insurance companies that complementary medicine should be reimbursable by government and private health insurance plans," unquote. And here we discover one of science-based medicine's favorite conspiracies. That is, everyone practicing alternative medicine is a hustler and a charlatan, selling placebos and snake oil for profit and personal gain. It is beyond belief that these folks fail to consider the possibility that because there are tens of thousands of alternative health practitioners serving millions of clients and patients, it might have something to do with the success and effectiveness of these very healing modalities. I realize this may be a difficult stunt for a skeptic brain to comprehend, but it's a very simple and common sense possibility that they may wish to consider. One among many glaring reasons why there has been a large uptick of interest in complementary medicine, both within the medical profession and among the public, is the loss of trust in conventional medicine itself. This has nothing to do with complementary medicine advertising, propaganda that science-based medicine skeptics want us to believe. Instead, it's a sign of increasing failures in our medical system. Drug companies' claims are no longer trustworthy. The federal health agencies consistently betray us by fast-tracking drugs that only shortly thereafter need to be stamped with a black box warning. For decades, the industry has become a profitable machine, sourcing false promises about the latest medications to hit the market. Its court fines for engaging unethical or illegal activities grow annually, and conventional medicine's graveyard of victims is many square miles larger than the tiny plot of land of casualties that may be contributed to complementary and alternative medicine. So if we were to undertake a thought experiment to carry science-based medicine's principles, criticisms, and beliefs to the ultimate conclusion, this also being reflected in the Wikipedia, what might modern medicine look like through the eyes of a science-based medicine skeptic? Science-based medicine imagines itself to be the new paradigm of conventional medicine that will replace the current medically accepted evidence-based medicine model. It hails itself as the future paradigm for evaluating medical research and to recommend best practices and treatments. Yet its failure lies in contributing absolutely no original research to improve the practice of medicine. Rather, as we have noted above, science-based medicine is a repository of sarcasm, mean-spiritedness, and criticism. It is a harbinger of medical inquisition, its witch hunt to defame complementary medical practitioners and their therapies. Therefore, if a curse from the heavens were to fall upon America's healthcare, and science-based medicine proponents were to take control over our national healthcare policies and medical schools, what might our healthcare systems look like? Based upon what I can surmise from an extract from the numerous articles science-based medicine's websites, what would be our options for freedom of medical choice? How accessible would natural and alternative health therapies be for patients? So below is this list I compiled, and it's based upon conclusions I have drawn from science-based medicine articles criticizing natural therapies and other health-related topics. One, defund and discontinue National Institutes of Health, National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health. Cease government research grants for alternative health modalities and therapies. Discontinue complementary health courses in medical schools and discourage education of complementary therapies at universities. Chiropractic practice would be limited to only a small number of health indications who would not be covered by your insurance plans. Access to chiropractic services would be strictly out of pocket. Similarly, acupuncture could only be provided for a small number of medical indications would likely require a physician's recommendation or prescription. Vitamin supplements would be removed as over-the-counter products and put into the hands of pharmaceutical companies. Many supplements, or all supplements, would require a doctor's prescription. All dietary and nutritional counseling must conform to the terribly outdated standards set forth by the American Dietetic Association, which represents mainstream pharmaceutical interests. No state could authorize naturopathic medical board certifications, and current states that recognize naturopathic medicine would have permissions revoked. The large majority of botanical medicines can no longer be available and likely not purchasable over the counter. The practice of homeopathy would be outlawed, and the sale of homeopathic remedies would be banned. The practice of traditional Chinese medicine in Ayurvedic and energy medicine, such as Reiki, polarity therapy, therapeutic touch, would be prohibited. A nationwide moratorium would be set to prohibit the labeling of genetically modified foods. Water from public utilities, dental products like your toothpaste and mouthwash would be required to contain fluoride. Vaccination for all children and adults would be mandated at a national level, and children could be vaccinated without parental approval. Failure to comply could result in outrageous fines or criminal proceedings. And finally, all sites focused on alternative health, plant-based diets, and natural nutrition, vaccination hesitancy, dangerous electromagnetic radiation, GMO risks, etc., would be strictly censored. Undoubtedly, this list may appear to be unduly extreme and perhaps unfair. Nevertheless, I believe it accurately reflects the condemnations to hate mongering found scattered throughout science-based medicine, skeptic blogs, and articles. Skeptics disproportionately ridicule complementary medicine, while at the same time fail to critically evaluate their own medical profession's rickety research to find its way into peer-reviewed medical journals. Furthermore, this is the same scenario subtly being promoted by skeptics on Wikipedia's alternative health pages who are in the habit of referencing Gorski, Novello, and other science-based medicine authors in addition to their predecessor, Stephen Barrett, and Quackwatch. If my list is accurate, it portrays a regime that may best be defined as medical fascism. In my opinion, science-based medicine should never be perceived as a champion of public health. Rather, it is an ideological cancer. Its authors are master wordsmiths who use the language of science to tailor the illusion of science-based medicine as a new gold standard. Nevertheless, it is only a ruse to confuse the public and restore the dying Flexner paradigm of modern medicine that should be buried alongside its millions of victims. Adieu.
Thank you very much, Richard Gale. Richard and I have written, researched, in-depth investigations, 142 articles on vaccines and Wikipedia alone. So they're all up there. These are not opinion pieces. They're all back, are all cited. They're all fully referenced from peer-reviewed literature. Go to prn.fm. Again, we're asking you to walk away from Wikipedia. And the more you share this with other people, the more people realize how they've been used and unfortunately abused by the information that prevents complementary and alternative medicine from even being considered for people who may need it. In a moment, Professor Francis Boyle, who's standing by to join us to talk about the coronavirus and its weaponization. But first, Luann Panessi has just a few comments, because Luann is the one screening all the people for this historic anti-aging clinical study that begins March 22nd. We did the first part, and that's done. The results were fantastic and virtually record-breaking. No one's ever done it before. And the people on the scientific board who gave us what to do next said we had to prove that our first results were not were reproducible, were not simply a one-off. So we're reproducing it to meet the gold standard, and we've allowed a control group to do it from home and a group on campus, all be on campus. But everybody will be receiving the same identical protocol. We gave people, I had a two-hour conference with everyone this past Saturday, answering all their questions. We gave them till Wednesday to decide if you want to be in or not. And 90% or more said no. And the ones who said yes, they're in it, and we're very happy to have them. Luann, for you for a few minutes, please.
Sure. Well, it's been a very busy time, Gary, and very exciting at the same time. So right now, for the people that are working remotely, I have exactly two positions left. And I have one position left for people who might want to come on campus and be with you and me and others for the on-campus 60-day program. So if people are interested in that, there is a fee for that, obviously, to cover, you know, food, room, board, lab work, everything. So if you're interested in something like that, do give me a call. This is going to be the final week. Once I have my numbers in, then we're going to go forward with all of our planning. So if people are interested, give me a call. My number is 903-881-7008. Again, it's 903-881-7008. Give me a call. I need to interview everybody. And it's not for everyone. And for people who can't afford it, listen, you know, there's lots of information out there. You're going to have the information published after this is all over, and people will be able to go out there and do the very best they can. It is great information.
Thank you, Luann. Just so that those are coming on who've never heard of this, the whole point of the story is to see, can we do in a very controlled and objective blood chemistry analysis that the scientists created, the blood analysis, and exercise, stress management under the Hamilton Depression Scale. I'm donating my time. In fact, donating more than my time. I spent a small fortune supporting the whole thing. And can we do what I've done for my entire career? Help people reverse disease, slow down the aging process, actually reverse damage to the DNA, help turn off inflammatory markers in the brain, the body, the muscles, the heart, the eyes. It's a very complex subject matter. Yet for 33 years, I was director and research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology and Anti-Aging Medicine. I published a lot of original work in this field, done a lot of clinical studies, over 42. So this is kind of the culmination, put it all together. And now we did it the first time in a small clinical study. Now we've doubled the size of the study to make it not just a small clinical study. And we're allowing a small subgroup in of five individuals, 50 to 60, 60 to 70, and to see, can we take someone who's younger and who's not yet advanced in diseases of lifestyle and reverse that aging process as well. So this has never been done before. We've done it. Now we have to duplicate it to make sure it meets the gold standard. So you'll reach out to Luann if that interests you. I'm going to go to a clip, and this is a clip I'd like you to listen to. It's a short clip. It's only 3 minutes long. Then I'd like you to call in and share your point of view. It's about who are the responsible ones in our society of all ages, all genders, all backgrounds, who is going to be stepping forward to help us resolve many of our crises that the current people in power are creating, not resolving. And so we're going to go to that clip right now. This is a professor, and he's being interviewed by Bill Maher. I think his name is Professor Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T, Coddling of the American Mind. Let's hear what he has to say.
Yeah, the basic finding, which I think surprised a lot of us assumed that the millennials were from 1982 to around 2000 or 1998. But kids born around 1995 had a very different childhood from kids born a few years before. And so research by Gene Twenge and others show that kids born after 1985, they don't get driver's licenses as much. They don't drink as much. They don't go out on dates. They don't have sex as much. What are they doing? They're sitting at home on their devices talking with each other. And this seems to be changing social development. And we know this. This is not just some, you know, perception from outsiders, because the rates of anxiety disorders, depression, self-cutting, where they have to be admitted to hospitals, and suicide, all of these rates are way, way up, especially for girls, and it all begins right around 2011. And so it's when this generation first enters college campuses, and 2013, that's when all this new attitude about speech comes. So the most important psychological idea in the book is anti-fragility, that there are some things that are fragile, like a wine glass. If you knock it over, it breaks, nothing good happens. If something is plastic, you knock it over, it doesn't get damaged, but it doesn't get better. But there are some things that have to be stressed or challenged, like the immune system. If you protect your kid's immune system, right, use bacterial wipes, you're actually hurting the kid. You're preventing the system from getting the information it needs. Same thing with social life. If you protect your kids from being excluded, from being insulted, from being teased, when they grow up, it's like the princess and the pea, a little tiny thing that they encounter on campus now becomes intolerably painful. Kids need structure and authority, and when parents try too hard to be their friends. Yeah. But on the point about whether this is everywhere, so this is such a new trend. We only began to notice these things in the last couple of years. But what seems to be the case is that the anxiety and depression, the fragility, the mental illness, that's across the country, across social classes, across races. And that's why social media use is beginning early, beginning in middle school. That seems to be the most likely culprit of several culprits. So that's all over the country. But the shout-downs, the screaming at professors, we've mapped that out. That is almost only in the Northeast and just the coastal strip of the West Coast and a little bit in Chicago.
The sanitization of these social media sites, you know, you have a kid puts beautiful pictures of themselves on the site, and then another kid looks at it and feels that their life is less than that beautiful sanitization. Is that affecting them as well and creating a lot of this anxiety?
Absolutely, and that's probably the main reason why it's affecting the girls so much more than the boys. Because if you imagine, you know, all of the kids in America around 2007 to 2009, and you suddenly just drop millions and millions of iPhones all over the country and kids pick them up, what are the boys going to do? Oh, video games. And it turns out, actually, video games aren't that harmful. But wait, but just to finish up here, so the boys are mostly doing video games, which aren't so bad. Even if they're running around imaginary worlds killing people, as my son does with his friends, it's really cooperative, there's teamwork, they're talking. What girls are doing is putting something out and then waiting anxiously while people comment on it. Right. And so it's the social comparison, it's the fear of missing out. Also, girls' bullying is relational, boys' bullying is physical, so social media doesn't really affect it. But girls can never get away if they're being bullied. So this is why we think the suicide rate is up 25% for boys, but it's up 70% for girls.
That was Professor Jonathan Haidt. He's concerned that the parents, not all parents, but so many parents, especially the professional class, the more educated class, have wanted their children to be more perfect, more an example of themselves. So they're creating their children's lives based upon the artificial illusion they have about themselves. And this is causing all kinds of problems, and we're seeing that. Your thoughts. What do you see the problem being? What do you see the solution being? Call us at 888-874-4888. Excuse me. 888-874-4888. It's all about illusion, isn't it? There is a statement by Arthur Koestler. He says, "Nothing is more sad than the death of an illusion." The illusion of our honesty when most people are not. They lie all the time about everything, including things they don't have to lie about. Our disengagement from that which is the commons, where if we all worked together, we wouldn't have the problems we have today because we'd be caring about everyone else, not just ourselves. One of the saddest, and I'm going to wait here to see if anyone chooses to call in before I go forward, but one of the saddest interviews I've ever done was when I was filming over a seven-year period, Poverty Inc., the film, the documentary. And I was down on the east coast of Florida near Cape Canaveral, and I'd ask a person who was down there from the homeless community, where are all the wealthier homeless people? And he introduced me to a man who, well, we filmed him, he's in the film. Interesting, because I said, sit on this curb. So he said, why? I said, because behind you, I just want to film you, then I want to go further back and I want to film this gigantic sports complex that you built. You donated this to the University of Florida. And now they won't give you a room. What was this, $100 million? And they can't find you a room? A single little bedroom? No, they can't. He's living in the garage of his former caretaker. But he was very humble. He was not one of these wealthy guys that made this money the wrong way and spent it all on himself. Most of his money he gave to important causes. He told me about a woods nearby, so we drove over the woods. This was what was interesting. In the woods, there were all these cars. I'm guessing about 40 cars. They were pretty much spaced across from each, around, not close together. And I walked up, and there was a family of four, parents and then two teenage daughters. And when I got closer, I saw that they were cooking some noodle soup on his radiator. And they were embarrassed, and they said, no filming, so I didn't film them. But I wanted to find out their story. It turns out they both, together, their incomes were around $300,000 a year. They both had advanced degrees in aeronautical engineering. They both had worked for NASA. They'd been strong members of their communities. They had long-time ties. And when they lost their jobs because they weren't paying attention, even though they were being told that these jobs were being cut and a lot of NASA programs defunded, when they finally lost their jobs, they kept up the same lifestyle. They didn't want anyone to know they weren't working. And that was because their daughters didn't want to be shunned as they had shunned other parents' children who had lost their work because they could no longer, quote, be a part of our clique. And so even when they had no money coming in, they kept spending money like they did, including, he told me, going to a raffle, an auction, and buying something that cost him $5,000 when he had no income coming in. So over a period of 2 years, they burned through all their life savings, still didn't have income, and when he went to get a job, he wanted a job at the old salary, around $150,000 plus vacation, etc. Nobody was willing to give it. There were younger people being hired coming in from India and other countries willing to do it for $30,000, $40,000 with no benefits. Again, he chose to be in denial and did not change based upon the circumstances that he was living in until the day came when they could no longer stay in their home because they got a foreclosure notice, and by the time they decided to go do any kind of work, he ended up having to wash cars at one of those car wash places, and his wife was cleaning homes. And if they both worked, they would make enough money to stay in a motel. If not, then they had to outfit their Cadillac Escalade, or this larger version, so they could spend the night in there. And I said, what is the hardest lesson to have learned during this? He said, the lesson wasn't just my lesson. It showed me how absolutely insignificant I was to all the so-called friends I had, because when I was their neighbor and bring him over, when we vacationed together to Canada and the Thousand Lakes up there, it's a place called the Thousand Lakes. I've actually been there. It's a beautiful place. He said, and our kids grew up together. They knew for 2 years that I was out of work. They knew that both of us had no income. At no point did any of the people in our neighborhood say, could they help us with anything? And he said the final thing was when he was leaving his house, he had no place to put the furniture. He said, you know, they waited too long to even try to sell it. They couldn't afford a storage location. So he went up and down the street and just told the neighbors, you know, if you want to come over today, take whatever you want, because we're not taking it with us. And nobody said anything. That's when you're living with illusion. And it was the great writer, M. Somerset Maugham, who said it is dangerous to let the public behind the scenes. They are easily disillusioned. And then they're angry with you, for it was the illusion they loved. And that's why I think it's time that we looked at the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, the media personalities, from Rachel Maddow to, you know, Sean Hannity. Look at all of them. Look at what we've become, and look at the people who are the spokespersons for this dysfunction and deception. Look at the people who are coming forward to talk about the environment, yet are continuing to pollute the environment by their own personal lifestyles, but are virtue-shaming others. Look at the mess we're in today. How do we get here? Not everyone, but those who are participating in a duality, wanting to have the world one way, willing to contribute nothing to change its outcome, and then feeling like a victim when what you didn't do comes back at you as cause and effect. We're out of time, everyone. Our guest, by the way, was having trouble with his Skype. Professor Francis Boyle will be on the next one or two programs. And for those of you on our sister station, WBAI, yesterday, instead of doing the regular live show I do 5 days a week, I did my Tuesday night show, because this wonderful human being's words I found so empowering and so touching, I felt that everyone in the audience would appreciate it. So that's why I had her on yesterday. She was a part of our conversation with Remarkable Minds. If you haven't heard that show, download it. It's about the trees and nature and woods and how we should spend more time with them and better understand what they're really there for. Have a nice day, everyone.